Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, and welcome to the 100th episode. That's right, Hip Hop Saved My Life, episode 100. Only taken us, the best part of 5 years. Most podcasts achieve that within their first year, because those people have a work ethic. I hope the lockdown is treating you all right. I'm finding it quite stressful. I sort of don't know whether to work a lot and then get anxious about not spending enough time with my family or not doing any work. And then getting anxious about falling behind. I guess the correct answer, as I'm saying out loud, is to do something in between. I mean, it's so fucking obvious, isn't it? Anyway, welcome to another lockdown episode of Hip Hop Saved My Life. As I said, the 100th episode, and it's a very special one. It's with Jaguar Skills. Now, Jaguar Skills is one of my favourite DJs. He's absolutely amazing. If you haven't checked out any of his stuff, please make sure you do. And he is doing an incredible project where every week he's putting out a podcast that is a week... Can you hear my kids screaming playing Fortnite? Anyway, if you can't, that just makes me sound mad. But anyway, Jaguar Skills is doing a podcast every week, and each week is an hour-long mix of a different year in hip-hop's history. And he takes it down from the sample, original sample, all the way up to the actual finished track. And it's obviously taken him ages. When you listen to it, you think this must have taken absolutely ages, and he's done it for every year of hip-hop. And it's given him an insight into the skills of different hip-hop producers and also the trends throughout the years. And so I would say that this is an episode for the nerds. If you're a production nerd, and even if you're not, if you've just got a vague interest in the production of hip-hop, I think this one, you'll like this. And so much so that we're going to do a second episode. It's the first time that Jaguar Skills has ever done an interview like this. So unless you're a mate of his, this is going to be the first time you've ever heard his voice. So enjoy that. Not a great episode for me, I'll be honest with you. It's mainly just me going, oh, really? That's amazing. that's what I tend to do when I'm kind of, I guess I geeked out a little bit. Anyway, enjoy the 100th episode of Hip Hop Saved My Life with the one and only Jaguar Skills.
This is the Hip Hop Saved My Life podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Now sit back, because it's time for the podcast.
Okay, welcome to Hip Hop Saved My Life. This is another episode that, we're recording on lockdown for obvious reasons, because we are on lockdown. And I am delighted to say, obviously normally during this bit I do a little bit of banter with Rupert. Rupert's not here, so I'm going to just go straight into introducing our guest. I think this guy's one of the best DJs in the world. I'm a huge fan of his, and this is a very rare thing that's happening now, because we are about to hear, you are about to hear from the legend that is Jaguar Skills. Hello, sir.
Hey, how you doing?
How you doing, man? What is the situation with this? Because do you do interviews, or have you done interviews?
No. I've never done any. The whole thing was that I wasn't going to ever talk. And so, you know, like Daft Punk and all of those dudes. Designed like that, but I just figured out that, you know what, I don't need to talk. I don't need to say anything. But that's gone on for like 15 years or whatever now. So I might as well talk now, as we're all in lockdown. So And it's the
is it the lockdown? Is it the lockdown that's basically triggered you deciding to actually chat?
Yeah, fuck it. It's basically no. It's because you've asked me, man, and I'm a big fan of yours as well. And it's, I don't know, it seems to make sense. Plus, we're going to be talking about hip hop, and that's what I like talking about, rather than why wear a mask or anything like that.
Well, what I wanted to ask you straight away, you are currently in the middle of putting out the most amazing project for, as a hip-hop fan.
Yeah.
It's an incredible thing you're doing. Do you want to break down what exactly it is you're doing?
Well, I wanted to bring out, and I wanted to put out some podcasts and some mixes, right? And I've been putting out mixes for like for years, and I think I've done probably every combination of any sort of theme or style or music style or I wanted to put something out that was that kind of didn't age, that meant something to me, that is put together by somebody who kind of really understands and loves the what it is. And what it is hip hop. And that's what kind of got me into music in the first place. And I thought, it kind of evolved, but I kind of wanted to do an almost academic piece of hip hop that is done properly. You know, it's not like the top 40. Basically, it's every year. I'm putting out a podcast every week for every year in hip hop. And there's 41-hour podcasts. So I'm mixing the entirety of hip hop, everything.
Yeah.
Once a week.
It's insane.
Plus the breaks as well, man. That's the other thing. It's the breaks as well. So I'm mixing in the samples that they sampled and then transitioning.
Yeah, because I think it's at the beginning of the 2001. Is it Apollo Kids? You start with the break for that before Ghost starts rapping or whatever. And it's so great to hear that break before. I don't know. It's such a as a hip hop fan. It's like a wet dream, essentially. Do you know what I mean? It's like amazing.
Well, that's the thing. That was the thing that got me into hip hop in the first place. Well, that's one of the things that excited me about hip hop back in the day was like me finding the break that they sampled. That was the thing. That is the real nerd nugget, you know, that you had to go to the record and tape exchange. You had to go to a charity shop. You had to find your friend's uncle's record collection and find it in that. You know what I mean? And just the discovery of that, I wanted to put into a mix somehow and do it so it's almost like you're learning how they made it. You know what I mean? But not intentionally and not in a kind of dickish, nerdy way. It's just I want to do it right, pure vibes. And not have so many jingles or radio idents and all that kind of shit. I wanted something where you could put on from like now until, you know, 10 years time. And that is the historical piece of hip hop that was that year, you know?
How long is it taking you to put this together? 41, it's 41 episodes.
40.
That's 41 mixes. 40 mixes.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to put that together?
See, I did a mix back in the day. How people kind of seem, it's kind of my first big thing, I guess, was that I mixed 600 records in 60 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was the history of hip hop in 60 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was the first time, I think, that anyone had kind of attempted that or done that kind of super quick mixing, like two bars at a time.
Yeah.
And I just did that as an experiment, really. But then I made it into a mix and then I put it online and it got downloaded like 4 million times or something in like a week. So, and then MTV wrote about it and it was like this mad thing. So I already had that kind of hip hop historical thing going on in the back of my mind. But then I wanted to put out these some podcasts and I was thinking, I don't know really what to do. So I thought, shit, you could actually do it. You know, you could actually fucking make a podcast that's 1 hour and then have that year of hip hop and you could do 40 of them and it would be mental. And then you could do all the artwork because I do all my artwork as well. So I work with some artists, but I do all the design work. So I was thinking about graphically as well.
It's all packaged beautifully, man. I mean, it's like a proper thing, isn't it?
Yeah. And I really wanted to think about every element. And then, so I started working on it about 6 months ago.
Right.
And it took me about 2 months to get the track listings together even. Because, you know, like going into like 1983. How about 1983? Let's do an hour of 1983. It's like, fuck, man. I don't really know. I know some. But I don't know like Kev, Waterbed Kev. Do you know him? Do you know?
No, I never
heard of Waterbed Kev. And so like, he's got a tune. So from 83.
Yeah.
And so like to do that, that was the first kind of point, do all of that research. So that took me a couple of months and then starting it, just the kind of mental attitude you have to apply when you're starting the history of hip hop first track, you know, on the year 1979. It's just, it's mental, man, that I'm even doing it. But I've managed to do pretty much all of it now, and it's the response has been great, man. I feel it's like my best work for sure.
Oh, mate, it's unbelievable, and like it's just so good what you're doing. But I'll tell this story. So on my tour, I spoke to you just before my tour started, and I said, look, I'm after a hip hop mix to play when the audience are coming in. Would you be up for doing it, right? And you said yes, and obviously I was delighted that you said yes. What I didn't expect was the level of meticulousness that you go to make that thing, as like you don't half-ass anything, do you? Like,
no.
the level of detail in that mix is it's like, honestly, it felt to me like that was something for commercial release. Do you know what I mean? That the quality of what you've done and the details and all that.
Yeah.
And obviously, with doing this podcast, you've got that's a lot of effort. What is your motivation for doing that? Are you just driven by the fact? Are you just a workaholic madman or something? I mean, what's the drive behind that?
See, I come from when I started really getting into hip hop and the music and everything, there was albums out that were fucking amazing, man.
Yeah.
And like, I'm talking 3 Feet High and Rising, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back, you know, Low End Theory, Midnight Marauders, and all the De La Soul albums, Prince Paul, you know, and Dr. Dre. You listen to a Dr. Dre record now, and it still sounds as fresh as it did 25 years ago, right?
Yeah.
It's because they made it really well.
Right.
When you make something really well and you spend a lot of time, it lasts forever. And I always wanted to do that. I always knew that what I did was kind of throw away, like in a way, it's a throwaway little thing. You put a mix on in the background and you just walk, you know, you do your thing and then you do the next mix and it carries on.
Yeah.
But I wanted to make something. I tried to make something as good as the skits that I hear on Dr. Dre albums or Tribe Called Quest albums or De La Soul albums. And isn't it great when you listen to a record and you hear something new for the first time and you've heard that tune 100,000 times before?
Oh, mate, it's amazing. Yeah, it is.
So,
and I think that happens musically as well as lyrically. You know, when you suddenly get a bar, you suddenly understand a metaphor and that you hadn't clocked before. Like, it feels amazing when that happens.
Right? Yeah, no, exactly. So that's what I kind of wanted to do, or that's what I tried to do with my work, is that I want repeated listening, right? And I want you to really get it. And if you like what I'm doing, then you will hear stuff that I've put in that you might not have heard 100 times, you know, like since. I just want to do it so it lasts, really. And I am a perfectionist when it comes down to certain things, but I do know that after I've finished it, it's out forever then, and I can't do anything. And so I might as well have done my best. And especially now, you know, I don't know, man, the future of my profession anymore. Right?
Yeah.
Really? It's like, what are you doing this for? And I'm doing this. I started doing this by making tapes for my friends. We used to sit in a car and we used to put it on a shit sound system and smoke some weed and listen to some hip hop. And the look on their faces when I'd have got a tune that they liked, or that community, that's what it is. And that's what I'm doing it for now. It's just reverted right back to the beginning. Whereas I'm literally doing this for the love of hip hop and what got me into music. And hopefully me adding all the breaks and all of this thing, I'm showing you everything that I learned from hip hop as well. So the more I make them, I'm finishing them off. I'm just doing it strictly for the love and the kind of documentation of it. And I hope that, And it comes through as well, you know, when you listen to it.
Yeah, mate, it's so good. Obviously, you're a hip hop head and you know your stuff, but you don't just DJ hip hop, do you?
No.
Or, you know, pre-apocalypse, you didn't just DJ hip hop.
Pre-apocalypse, you know, like BC.
Yeah.
I got really upset with hip hop at a certain time.
Right.
And I thought, this isn't what it's about. This is
Remember what? Was it a specific record or was it an era or what?
It was certain eras. I always didn't want to be. See, when I first started, I was a journalist, man. I was a hip hop journalist and I published a couple of hip hop magazines. So in the 90s, I was like the guy, man, the influencer, the hip hop influencer. And I had mad tapes of like, I had like Illmatic on tape sent to me from the studio.
Right. Really?
That's how mad it was. So I was walking around with a bag of tapes.
Right.
All the old heads used to go, man, the hip hop's shit now. You know, it's not Big Daddy Kane or Rakim anymore. It's just like De La Soul and Tribe Called Quest. This is shit. What the hell's this?
Is that how people were reacting to that then?
Yes. Right.
It's
so you had,
mad, isn't it?
Yeah. So you had people who were into Rakim,
yeah.
Big Daddy Kane. And what else were they into? Public Enemy, of course.
Yeah.
BDP and KRS-One. And people like this, yeah. Tool G Rap, Juice Crew. And then, yeah. Then De La Soul arrived and Brand Nubian and all these other groups. But De La Soul specifically, they had some real problem because it was like suddenly comedy rap almost. But
it was such a change, wasn't it, when De La Soul, yeah. The whole image and the vibe and everything was different, wasn't it?
But it was amazing, though. It was like, that was the thing got me. It was like, honestly, 3 Feet High and Rising when they started it with a game show.
Yeah.
Hey, all you kids out there. Welcome to 3 Feet High and Rising. Now, here's what we do. The following contestants, how are you doing, contestants?
All right.
So, fellas, tell us a little bit about yourselves. Contestant number one.
How you doing, Al? Just came all the way down from Wichita.
You could cut out the tape. There was a proof of purchase, and you'd send it to this weird address, and then you'd get something. I don't know, there was a comic book in it, and one of the tunes was Transmitting Live from Mars, where it was they were cutting up a French record saying écoutez, amidi, and it was like,
yes, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And that was the funniest shit. And to me, that was like where I was at, because my dad was a record producer, and he had this ridiculous record collection, man, like 100,000 records in the house. It was like a record store. So to be able to draw the breaks and samples from my dad's collection was just amazing, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, people were cussing De La Soul, man, and Tribe Called Quest. It was like kind of jazzy and a bit kind of soft, you know?
Soft, yeah.
But I listened to these records back and they sound great. But at the time, I fucking hated DMX and Rough Riders and all of that shit.
Right.
Even, I didn't really like The Chronic.
Mate, do you know what? I was a bit like that as well. But what
myself?
Why didn't you like it? Why didn't you like it?
Because I hated the tune Funky Worm by Ohio Players.
Yeah.
I hate that. I hated that. And it seemed like the whole album was like a reconstruction of that kind of. And
yeah,
didn't like it, man. But it's great now, you know. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I tell you what really broke my heart is when I first heard, I remember going into Deal Real Records, going down into the basement, and there was Pete there, I think, and he was like, check this out, it's Nas's new record. I'm like, what? He just fitted like Illmatic, you know, the Illmatic period, it's his new album. It's like, holy shit, I didn't even know. Like, so he goes down, he puts it on, and it was If I Rule the World. Right?
Yeah.
I felt like crying.
Oh, no.
I was staring at the record like, no.
Imagine smoking weed in the street without cops harassing. Imagine going to court with no trial. Lifestyle cruising blue behind the waters. No welfare supporters. More conscious of the way we raise our daughters. Days are shorter, nights are colder. Feeling like life is over. These snakes strike like a cobra. The world's hot, my son got knocked. Evidently, it's elementary. They want us all gone eventually. Trooping out of state.
And then it all sort of started. I mean, that's so long ago, but it all started kind of falling apart around then for me.
No, but mate, I think a lot of people had that experience. With that single, so excited about hearing the new Nas, and then you're just like, what the fuck is this, man? It was like, you forget now because of what he's done since. Do you know what I mean? And you sort of, you go, well, you don't know the Nas, you don't know what Nas is going to turn up, you know, in a way,
right.
But that was the first time, because bearing in mind we'd only heard Illmatic before that, right?
Yeah, no, you're right. I got this tape, I and as well, I had these tapes, right? So I got these demo tapes, right, which actually turned into the Lost Tapes, right?
Right.
That they released. But I had this tape where it had those tracks on it, right?
Right.
And I was could not wait to get it on CD and vinyl, right?
Yeah.
Could not wait. There was this tune called Life is Like a Dice Game. They're so amazing. Yeah. There's one called No Original, I think. There's a couple of other ones. Fucking amazing. I never knock a brother. I'm anti-jail for real. Smooth criminal skill locked in a human flesh shell. Watching niggas get rich beside me. Pushing a 5E, why me? I'm in the passenger seat. But I see me as Haile Selassie in my kingdom. Sipping Asti Spumante. Drifting, reality kicks in. I need the papers to start clicking. Gotta connect out in Richmond. Hey, nigga in the fam, a pitching. It's on. Popper was a player. I remember I loved that tune. And like, there's loads of great tunes.
Yeah, so I walked down to this record store and I was like, shit, I haven't heard this one because I got this tape. Yeah. I haven't heard this one. Oh my God, this wasn't on there. Let's go. And it was the worst tune I'd ever heard. Now it's great though, isn't it? When you listen to it, it's like, yeah, I get it. It's all retro. I get it. It's like the 80s. It's
yeah.
The
80s shit. Yeah.
Like he's bringing back whatever the fuck, like Curtis Blow, Wicked. Yeah. But yeah. I wasn't there at that point. And this was some bullshit to me, but you know.
Yeah, I think a lot of people felt like, but almost it was like when I first went to watch Phantom Menace, and I was sitting there going, I think this might be shit, but it can't be because it's Star Wars.
I know.
Like, it was that's how it was like with that Nas record. I was going, I don't think I like this, but I must like it because it's Nas and he's amazing. You know, so there must be something wrong with me. Maybe I'm tired. I don't know. Like you just start.
That's what I feel a bit like the Jay Electronica album. That's how I feel about that.
You're not feeling that album, are you?
Not at all.
So go. What's
only because I think, like, I don't know whether he can really make beats, and that.
Yeah.
What he's done, something really clever, where he's made this really good beat, and then he's deconstructed the shit out of it, and then he's put it through all this shit and fuzzy stuff, and then he's put it off beat, and then because it's so because he's so far ahead and it's so abstract, and he's tweaking it so much, or that he just can't make beats, and it's either that to me, and it's like either you can't make beats and these are really shit beats, or are these good beats and I don't know, and is this way ahead of my shit. I know he's an amazing lyricist. And
I mean, his rapping,
he's the best.
Oh my God, it's unbelievable, right?
Right, it's just like Nas, isn't it? But like a really twisted, weird version of it. Like, I didn't get it, you know. And like, I listened to it once, and the one tune that I did like was like a sample of the same sample that they used for CL Smooth's One in a Million, and it's called Shiny Suit Theory, and that came out a while ago as well. And I know. I'm like, I don't know. Like you're supposed to spit it for the culture. Pay no attention to the critics and the vultures. They'd rather have a shot of Belvy just to spite you. They cast the judgments because they feel they got the right to. Fuck them. I let the dice roll like the father did. I gotta shine, it's in my blood. I'm a Harlem kid. I treat my babies right, treat my ladies ladylike. Hit them with a remix to make sure that they play me twice. With a lot of hip hop nowadays, I'm not in that position to judge whether it's good or not, to be honest. And so I
What do you mean by that?
Because it's for young, it's for kids. It's for kids.
Right.
I like a kids thing. You know, I like watching Teen Titans Go with my boy. We love that.
What a show, by the way.
That is just everything to me, right? son, right?
Yeah.
And I like Robin. I think the character of Robin in that is just amazing. And all the characters, just great, right? But they've made something that I can watch and my son can watch, and it's brilliant, right?
Yeah.
And it's very clever, right? I wish hip hop was like that, you know? Because right now there's a lot of stuff that I hear and it's shit, man. And I don't know if I should force myself, because I love hip hop so much, to pretend that I like it, or then I think, well, you know what? That's not for me, man. It's not for me. I'm too old for this. So I can view it as a kind of weird, as a kind of music historian. I can take, and a DJ, I can take my mind out of it and I can play it and I can understand music in that respect. That, oh shit, I have to, you know, this tune's going to really smash the club. So I'm now going to play this and do a little remix of it. And I don't mind playing it because it does what it says. That's the whole reason why I'm playing it, is to rock the club. I'm not going to listen to it at home. But really, for the substance, there's nothing anymore. And I always wonder, like, what would like Chuck D and people, like when I was coming up, it was really like heavy, the music, and it was really layered and really thought out and intelligently produced and really well made. And then nowadays, when somebody's putting something on the SoundCloud and they've just mixed it in their house and it's over a generic beat and there isn't anything more, you know, there was this thing called biting back in the day.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And everybody had to sound different.
Yeah.
You had to, because if you sounded anything like anyone else, you'd be biting their style and no one would listen to you. And that was it.
Yeah.
Of the end of your career. And somehow it got homogenized somehow, I think around the kind of puffy era.
Yeah.
And now everything sounds the same. The kind of mainly commercial kind of stuff, popular stuff, you know, it sounds really similar, yeah, doesn't it?
And, yeah, it does. It's more homogenous than it feels like it used to be, certainly. Yeah.
So that's my only thing. But I used to be semi-afraid to think, yeah, that's shit, because it's hip-hop and I need to view it in a way, you know, it's the culture. But it's not. It's shit to me. Sorry, it's that shit to me. And, you know, little fucking little flute or whatever the I don't know, little whatever, is not happening. And with a tattoo on your face and doing your shit, you're like a weird 80s Joker criminal from a kind of middling Batman movie.
But is there any of that you listen to and you go, is there different degrees of it not being for you? Like, for example, is there stuff that you listen to and you think, that's good, I don't like it, it doesn't connect with me, but I understand that there's a craft to that and I get what they're doing. Oh, I just don't like it.
You know, once I got off my shit, like sometimes I'm let me properly check this shit out. And plus, when I'm making these podcasts, so I'm gonna go through like 2016 and get all the shit. I'm gonna fucking make it.
Yeah.
But there's a few, and the fucked up thing is I can't even think of their names, man. You know, and I listen to all the club records, of course, still.
Yeah.
But man, doing this hip hop podcast, this show I'm doing, and going back and seeing the levels, I'm honestly feeling that if Kendrick Lamar and J. Cole were back in the 90s, they'd be a bit like the Fushnikins. You know what I'm saying? They would be like, oh, J. Cole. Okay, he's got the J. Cole, and now we've got the Big Cap album, then we've got the fucking, you know, Boogie Monsters. And then they've, oh yeah, that's good. And they've got some Weird Souls of Mischief, like Casual. Casual's out, wicked. We've got him. And they've got Kendrick Lamar, wicked. I don't think that they would have the impact if they were in the 90s.
I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
Like, when Cool G Rap was totally there, my God, it's like a Scorsese movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Just the different, like Big Daddy Kane. Like LL Cool J, Murdergram, or Mama Said Knock You Out, or even Public Enemy stuff. Like, that shit was like massive blockbuster Marvel movies coming out for me, you know, like that, or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it was a much bigger deal, wasn't it? Obviously.
Yeah.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
That was the interesting thing doing this, like this show I'm doing, finding out that actually, you know, maybe it's obviously it's good, great that they're doing, because Kendrick Lamar and J. Cole is amazing, but like,
do you like those guys? I mean, are you a fan? Or
I've got into them from doing these things.
Right, right, right.
Okay. I love the way that Kendrick's music is really quite avant-garde and odd.
Yeah. You
know, the beats that he picks are quite weird.
And when I wake up, I recognize you looking at me for the pay cut. Bahamas, I be looking at you from the face down. One Mac 11, even boom with the bass down. Skimming, and let me tell you about my life. Painkillers only put me in a twilight. With pretty pussy and Benjamin is the highlight. Now tell my mama I love her, but this what I like, Lord knows. 20 of them in my Chevy, tell them all to come and get me. Reaping everything I sow, so my karma come in heaven. No preliminary hearings on my record. I'm a motherfucking gangster, silence for the record. Tell the world.
It occurs to me that the guys who really make solid hip-hop are the guys who know the hip-hop history. And hip-hop history is something that right now the kids just could not give a shit about.
And do you think that's a new thing? I mean, do you not... There's an argument that you're supposed to not give a shit about what came before you, right? So you can do something new.
Hip-hop's different, man. Hip-hop's different. You'd have a look at the album covers and everyone would shout it out. It was like important for you to know the tunes.
Yeah.
You're in a club. Yeah. Like back in the day, you'd go to the... I used to go to the Hop and Scratch, and to be part of the community, you need to know all the songs. It's important,
yeah.
And it's not now, and I don't mind it in a way, because obviously it's a young guy's game.
Mm.
But at the same time, the good guys, the ones that you resonate, that everybody seems to like, are the guys who really know the history, and they can talk about Q-Tip, and they really love that music, and they're not scared to go back into the vaults, because it's so amazing, man. Doing this project is just really open. It's so amazing, the hip-hop, and it's a shame that it gets lost in a certain era, and you can't listen to it again, like maybe the reggae DJs, you know, Rodigan.
Yeah.
He plays the new shit, but then he plays the old shit, and he tells you about the old shit, and it makes you feel like, oh God, this is cool. This is some old shit. This is some really cool old shit. You do that in a hip-hop club, you get kicked off. Like, I did this gig, and the promoter was like, yeah. I go, what do you want me to play? And he goes, hip-hop. I'm like, wicked. He goes, old school hip-hop. I go, really? He goes, yeah, just old stuff. And he goes, one request. I'm like, what? He goes, don't play any shit. So I'm like, right. Oh, this is great. So I go to the club and he goes, just strictly old school. I'm like, all right then. And first record I put on was a Tribe Called Quest record. Award tour, I think. Award tour.
Banger. Absolute banger. People give you ears, so I be sublime. It's enjoyable to know you and the concubines. Niggas, take off your coats. Ladies, act like gems. Sit down, Indian styles, you recite these hymns. See, lyrically, I'm Mario Andretti on the Momo. Ludicrously speedy or infectious with the slow-mo. Heard me in the 80s, JB's on the promo. Am I never in the quest to get the paper on the caper? But now, let me take it to the... Yeah, let's go. Award tour. Nothing.
Some other shit, nothing. Played some other shit. I played All About the Benjamins, nothing. Right. I played some Biggie Smalls, nothing. And then the promoter ran over. He goes, what the fuck are you doing? And I went, what? And he goes, old school, man. What the fuck is this? What the fuck is this? And I went, what do you mean old school? What is old school? He goes, some old Drake stuff, you know, like like some old, like, fucking hell, I don't know. You're the DJ, some Drake. Play some Drake. So then it was like, oh, just tunes. You just want hip hop. You just want some fucking hip hop shit. Like, and then I spoke to MK afterwards. I was like, I go, MK, man, I've done a hip hop gig.
Yeah.
He was like, wicked. And I go, and you know what the promoter? I flopped it, totally flopped it. And he goes, what did you play? And I go, well, he asked me to play some old school stuff. And then the reply was, he goes, you didn't play any old school stuff, did you? and I went, yeah. And he goes, like, what? Question mark, exclamation mark. I was like, Tribe Called Quest. And then there was all these laughing emojis. Ah! I'm like, he goes, when the promoter asks you old school, you never play old school. It's the fucking rule. And I went, yeah, no. No, I
get it. That's amazing.
Yeah. But, like, really, playing Biggie Smalls, that's 25 years old, man. You know, that's pretty...
I know. Yeah.
It's really old.
But also, the idea that a Biggie record would be received with indifference, I find it incredible. Yeah. But obviously that's the case. You know what I mean? Like, you can't...
Well, this guy was going crazy, man. This guy was going bananas. Like, it was his face as well. The funny thing is as well, when I wear a mask, right? So I wear a mask. Yeah. So no one knows what I look like. So, and also, you don't know whether I'm smiling or frowning or whatever. Yeah. You just see my eyes. And so people always get like, hey, and I'm smiling. Oh, no, it's all right, mate. And he was getting more and more aggressive. And I was like, chill. And I kind of wanted to like, look, I'm smiling. Look, it's my face. It's all right. It's all good. I changed to fucking your old school Drake records and Rick Ross records. Let's go really old school. Does anyone know this one? Let's play Jump Around. How about that one? That's fucking 30 years old.
That's bad, man. From doing it year on year, like for each year, did you notice, I don't know, you must have noticed trends, you must have noticed a change in quality of stuff? Or
it's fascinating. For a hip-hop, for me, even making it, it's amazing. It's, you can pinpoint the exact places where everything changed, where the guys, and it's really interesting to see who they were, actually, because some of them aren't the ones you think. There's some producers there that I thought were okay. Now I think they're amazing because I've deconstructed what they did with the sample.
Is there anybody in particular anything in particular that sticks out in
mind? Yeah. There's one really cool one and there's one really obvious like one, but what he did with the sample has just changed my whole idea of it. So Jump Around, right?
Yeah.
How Muggs got that beat from what he used is next level.
Are you serious?
Is the most black belt sample move, one of them. I mean, there's a bunch of them, but man, wow. It's basically this Chubby Checker record, right?
Right.
That if you heard it, you would want to turn, firstly, you'd want to turn it off within 10 seconds, right? But so that was the first thing. Some producers produce just the loop at the start. Some of them, like Premier, go for the end a lot. His shit's at the end.
Right. Q-Tip. Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Q-Tip really manipulates them a bit and puts them into three bars, but Jay Dilla gets the bit three quarters in that's almost silent that you have no idea you miss. That's he's the super Jedi. But Muggs got this Chubby Checker record, and it's like literally like it's like mental, right? Really fast. It's really fast and old sounding shit.
Yeah.
And then he's used this chop of it, and he slowed it down, and he's pitched them. And the way that he's done it, I can only think that he sampled it in randomly one day and didn't have anything else to do, or just chopped it up in a on his MPC and just was randomly hitting shit until it came. Because there's no way that you would hear that sample and go, yeah, that's one of the biggest hip-hop records of all time. No way that you could make that into it without
you. Do you think it would have been impossible for him to hear that original record?
Impossible. And that's what I'm going in like forensically now, like going back. There's no like detect Batman level going. Nah, that is no way. Like another one is Shook Ones Part 2.
Right.
How the fuck did you do that? Even I did it. I remade it. It took me like 5 hours. Constantly.
So you're remaking it for what? What's the, what are you is that just you trying to learn?
No. So on these podcasts, right, it goes from the sample to the hip-hop record, but the sample transforms into the loop, chopped up loop, and then the beats go over the top, and then the vocal, and then it turns into the hip-hop record.
So in order to do that, you have to basically go through the process that the producer went through when they put that record together.
Yeah, but Area 51 UFO retroactive style way. That's how you have to do it. So I have to find the fucking record first. Then I have to find the loop.
Yeah.
Then I have to hear their tune and go, okay, let's see how they did it. Then try and work out how they've done it. That could take either 60 seconds or 7 days or like a day, depending on what they've done. And then, so then you've got the chop of it all done. Then you've got the original record. Then you have to make the transition from that record to the break and to the hip hop record. So then it all seamlessly goes without you even recognizing it. Yeah. Oh, and then now it's the hip hop record. But actually, if you took the original break and you've seen what I've done to it, it might not sound anything like it. I might have made it all the same speed as the hip hop record, and then. But I mean, Shook Ones was 5 hours, and you know, because Shook Ones goes, it has the line, the kind of main sample line, and that sounds like a guitar. It sounds like somebody's twanging us down, There's a little intro to this jazz record, right? So it's a 1 minute intro of this guy randomly hitting piano, like just going jazz, right? Going mad jazz. Then it starts fading out. And on that fade out, on that tiny fade out, is like four semi-recognizable notes that you kind of recognize from somewhere. And you're thinking, is that it?
Yeah.
And then what you need to do, you need to put the volume up real loud. Then you need to time stretch each one. Then you need to chop each one up. Then you need to replay it. Then you need to pitch one up and two down and keep one the same. Then you have to add static to it on the kick. So what I've been doing as well, this is the levels, I've been collecting different statics from records, like noises, and matching them to the records. There's this brand Nubian record, All For One, which I remade, and they added, I read somewhere that they added some static, and it was like, yeah, they did. So I added that. So I've soloed that on one bar just for some nerd to know, oh, shit, he's actually done it. You know,
wow.
That's the process.
That is
I'm doing,
mad,
I'm doing it to pretty much every single great hip hop record that's ever made.
And has that made you love hip hop more or less?
Yes, so much more.
Right.
Like I was asked, you know, because everyone's streaming stuff right now. I've been asked to do a couple of them, which is really, really nice. But
yeah.
I can't listen to anything else right now apart from real music,
right?
With substance that feeds my soul. And that is hip-hop. And that is the history of it. And it's not just the commercial shit that I was really upset. I lost all my love and connection with hip-hop. I'm just playing these tunes, these dance records with guys rapping on them, saying ridiculous shit. I'm not even connecting to it like it's a hip-hop record. But when I started doing these podcasts, it's like all my memories of my 90s hip-hop period. And when I would interview all these rappers before anyone knew who they were.
So who are these magazines that you're working for?
They were mine. I published them. So there was this one magazine called Fat Boss, and it was quite big in the 90s.
I know Fat Boss. So that was your magazine?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, that was mine, yeah. Now, I was also head hip-hop writer for Blues and Soul magazine as well.
Right.
I wrote for The Source and XXL and loads of people, man. But that was for Fat Boss was my one. And with that, I guess it was the equivalent to being a blog on popping blog or something. You know, it's like it was bigger than a fanzine. It was published and it was distributed by Time Out, and we had actual big adverts, and it was a proper deal. But it was very underground still, and there wasn't many people interviewing, you know, the Alcoholics or whatever when they came to England.
Yeah,
so you ended up meeting them.
They're fucking underrated, by the way, aren't they? What a group.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be groups like that. But then it was like acts now that are massive that I managed to hang out all day with because no one, like, for instance, I went sneaker shopping with Proof.
Really?
In Kensington and hung out with Eminem and just hung out with them. We're walking around talking shit. I was went to D&D Studios and interviewed Premier, and he showed me how to Guru, and he showed me how to make a beat, and interviewed Biggie Smalls in the hotel room, and he fell asleep on me when I was interviewing him, which was just mental.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
So what happened? He sat on his bed, was he?
Yeah, right. So I get in there.
Yeah.
And obviously he'd just flown in, right?
Yeah.
He's just flown in and he's doing a show that night. There's loads of journalists waiting. I'm one of them. Go in. He's like, yeah, what's up? And he's on the bed.
And what were you like with these people? Were you chilled out, or are you fanboying at this stage? And what are you like?
Well, it changed from being super fanboy to being actually quite a weirdo. Just because I figured that you don't know me either. You know, why am I getting what? You know, my thing was like, okay, so I'm nervous to see you, right?
Yeah.
But you don't know who I am. Like, I could be a fucking lunatic. And I'm hanging out with, you know, I could like punch you. You don't know what the fuck I'm. You're letting this lunatic guy, and usually I was stoned out of my nut as well half the time. So going in And I was a real B-boy guy because I was really pissed off. You know, you'd have like, hi, there's Graham from The Face magazine, and he'd just be a twat, you know, and he doesn't know about hip-hop. The fuck's he interviewed? So I'd go in, and I ended up asking mad-ass questions to people just because, like, really weird ones. Like, I met Jay-Z, and I don't know why. Even thinking about it now, God damn. All right, Jay-Z, yeah, word out, what's up? Yeah. So when you take a shit, do you look at it? And he goes, yeah, cool, man.
Did he just play it? Did he react like that? Didn't even care?
Like, yeah, of course, man. Like, it was almost like, do you? I felt that if I came into an interview and just kind of was really weird.
Yeah.
I was just like a kind of stoned English Napoleon Dynamite, I guess. But, like, anyway, back to Biggie. So I went into the stairs. The room, and he's there.
Yeah,
he was massive, and he's Biggie Smalls. I'm there, looking at him, and then I said something like, "Your new record, yeah, it's wicked, man. How did you get the fucking list made? Yeah, you know what I'm saying? You know what? Yeah, I got the thing. We were in the thing. We got in the studio, and then we did it. Oh, that's wicked. So like, So which you do? Were you in D&D Studios when you did that? Yeah. Oh, cool. That's really cool, that studio, isn't it? It's like, it's a real cool... And the dude's snoring, man. It was such a weird moment, because, like, the Biggie Smalls is asleep on his bed, and you're just sitting there.
Who else is in the room at this point?
No one.
Oh, my God.
So I guess I was sitting there for, like, I don't know, 10 seconds or some shit.
And
then went to the door, opened it a bit.
Yeah.
And then the press officer was there. I'm like, come here. She goes, what? I'm like, look, he's asleep. She goes, oh, all right, then, well, you should leave then, shouldn't you? Yeah, I should, yeah. That was it.
That was the end of it?
Yes.
They didn't ask, they weren't apologetic, come back in, do another chat.
No, he's asleep now. Yeah. Okay, well, look, we'll get back to you. If you've got your goodie bag or whatever, your T-shirt and your free hat, whatever. Yep, cool. Right, bye. Give us a call later. Yeah.
Wow. Were you upset by that?
No, that's much better than an interview.
Right. Report that? That happened?
Yeah. He fell asleep, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd write that, yeah. I had this mad one when I got asked to interview Jay-Z, right?
Yeah.
And he was recording at Abbey Road Studios. Which was mental, even, like, thinking that. But that was just around the corner from Blues and Soul office.
Right.
So, yeah, I popped down there, and it was around lunchtime, and I go in. Firstly, going into Abbey Road Studios is just amazing. I went into the main studio, and it was Jay-Z and just the engineer, and they got this beat on. And he goes, yeah, sit down, right? So he's walking around, pacing up and down. I saw him writing the raps in his head, and he's just doing this. Like that, I swear to God, right? So I'm not going to say anything. He's walking past me. And he's going to the end. He comes on. And then he goes, all right, ready, let's go. So he goes in, and the booth, it's all glass, and I can see him. And the guy plays the tune, and he goes, he does it, right? And it was for a Jadakiss DMX or Ja Rule DMX and him. I don't know what tune it is, but it's this tune, right? And he stutters and like fucks up a bit.
Yeah.
So he goes, yo, let's do it again. I'll do it again. So he does it and he keeps the stutter bit in and changes the end bit. He hadn't written anything down.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway, I asked him. I interview him, right? So we're sitting in the room straight after this. And he's sitting there. And I go, so why did you change that? He goes, well, I like the bit. He just told me he liked the bit that that was freestyled and fucked up. He liked that bit, so he kept that in. But he changed the end because he wanted to change the end lyrics.
Wow.
But remembering that as your brain.
Yeah.
Do that. Yeah. It's like, it was unbelievable, right? So I'm sitting there. So I'm about to ask him, how did he get into hip hop or something stupid like this? So I'm about to ask him. Yeah. The door opens. Dame Dash. Yo, Jay, we got to go. And then he looks at me like, what the fuck? And I go, and I say to him, oh, come on, man. I just got here. Come on, for like 5-10 minutes. And I don't know why I said it like just like that. Oh, come on, man.
Yeah.
Looks at me like, fuck you. 5 minutes, slams the door, right? So then I say to him, all right, so how did you get into it? The door opens again. Leo Cohen comes in,
right,
who owns Def Jam.
Yeah.
Who's this legendary record guy. He's about...
massive, big dude, right?
He's about 8 foot tall.
Yeah.
And he was wearing this... he comes in and he sits next to me, really close, like almost on my lap. Like so close that his bum's like really in... he's right next to me. He puts his arm around my neck. He puts his watch in front of my face, right in front of my face, and goes, you got 5 minutes.
What is Jay-Z's reaction to this? I assume he's seen shit like this before.
He goes, yo, you know who that is? I go, yes. And he goes, that's the biggest player I know. Sorry about my shit American Jay-Z accent. He goes, that's the biggest player.
No, I loved it. I loved it.
And I'm like, yeah. So anyway, how did you get it? Yo, Jay, let's go. So they go up and they leave. Slams the door, right? And I'm like, oh my God, what the fuck just happened there, right? Oh man, so I get my dictaphone, I turn it off and put it in my bag and put my rucksack on and I walk out. I'm going down the stairs and hand my little security pass in and I walk through the door. And then waiting outside is the limo, is this black limo. All the windows are up, apart from one at the back that's down a tiny bit. And it's Jay-Z. And he looks at me, our eyes meet, the window goes up, and they just race off. And there I'm just standing there in like hip hop Napoleon Dynamite. I mean, yeah, so that was the kind of shit that I was doing in the 90s.
Well, look, listen, Jag, we're about out of time, man. But
sorry, man, we're going on.
No, it's all good. But listen, I'd love to get you on for a part two, mate, because obviously you've got loads of shit to say. So if you're up for it, let's do it.
Oh, I'd love that, man. Thank you.
Where can we check out your podcast in all the usual places, right?
Yeah, that's right. Mixcloud as well. iTunes, all of it.
Wicked. And you've got a clothing line as well, right?
Yeah. It's called Nope 23. It's my T-shirt label. Yeah. Yeah, check it out, note23.com. Get yourself some hip-hop weirdness.
Jag, mate, it's been an absolute honour to chat to you today.
Oh,
thank you for breaking your silence to come and chat to us.
Yeah, it all had to come out, didn't it? It came out like some diarrhoea, but it came out anyway.
That was wicked. Thank you, man.